Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, Atlanta, and more specifically, Buckhead. It's Emily Rowell here with the Atlanta Legal Experts radio show and with Peachtree Offices. I have Ryan McPherson today with us.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm great. Terrific. Good. Tuesday here. Another episode of Atlanta Legal Experts. Very excited to hear some stories from our guests this morning.
Me too. And I've got a nice lineup this morning. So we're going to go ahead and introduce our guests for today. We have John C. with the C Firm. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? And you will be talking a little bit about?
Entertainment law, intellectual property law.
Fantastic. We look forward to that. And we have Stacey Erishman-Mickel with the Erishman Law Firm, PC.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. And you'll be focusing on?
Immigration law.
Great.
Yes.
Great. And we have, last but not least, Ryan Locke with the Locke Law Firm. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Good. Thank you for being here.
Well, you're welcome. And I'll be talking about the exciting world of criminal defense.
Woohoo! It's going to be a great show. And I just want to let you know that Atlanta Legal Experts Radio has been brought to you in part by Peachtree Offices, 3A Law Practice Management, Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School, Equitable Payments, Golden Pear Funding, and U.S. Legal Support. And you can go to AtlantaLegalExperts.com and find all the links to our sponsors and the links to their website. And also you'll be able to see the guests here today and their full bios and pictures and everything like that. So we're really excited to get started today. Thank you for tuning in. This morning I have John C. He is an entertainment, intellectual property, and business lawyer and the founder and principal of the C Firm LLC, a law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Goat Farm Arts Center. As an artist himself, John has over a decade of experience as a musician, tour manager, and writer. John is also of counsel in the Entertainment and Media Practice Group in the Nashville, Tennessee office of Loeb & Loeb, one of the largest and most comprehensive entertainment and media practice groups in the world. John, his wife Jennifer, and their daughter Edie live in Decatur, Georgia. Were you born here, raised here, or?
Birmingham, Alabama was born.
Gotcha.
Moved here for law school, went to UGA in Athens, and then came to Atlanta immediately after.
And so you're an artist. What kind of artist are you?
Not a very good one, which is why I went to law school in the first place. When I was growing up, I played a lot of music, played in bands.
Awesome.
Here and there. But at a certain point, it occurred to me that, first of all, I didn't really care for the lifestyle. After a certain point, I was staying up too late, being on the road a lot.
Sure.
So I thought, well, what's something else I can do that would allow me to continue to have one foot in the arts world, but where I could potentially actually have a life where I could have a family and support them and have a career and things like that. So I decided to go to law school to study entertainment law and practice there officially.
Fantastic. So it's definitely a passion for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. So tell me, who are your typical clients?
Oh, well, geez, artists, musicians, filmmakers, photographers, really anyone who's doing anything arts related, theater production companies, mm-hmm. Animation studios. I've got some estates, the Wilson Pickett Estate being one that I work with. And any client names, by the way, that I mentioned are clients who've given me the permission to say I represent them. Just FYI for anyone who's wondering out there. And then of course I also receive calls from small businesses who, want some assistance with their copyrights and trademarks.
Right. And so basically the intellectual property goes along hand in hand with entertainment law. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The musicians, their kind of base unit that they work off of is that their copyrights, that's what they're monetizing, as well as those other things, their live performances and other elements like that. But, it all kind of comes down to their intellectual property. Mm-hmm. How they make it, how they protect it. And so that's something that I spend a lot of time talking to with my clients, copyrights and trademarks.
So describe a day in the life of John C.
Okay, well, our 21-month-old daughter gets us up pretty early. And then I head over to the office, respond to emails, get phone calls here and there. I will draft an agreement, review an agreement, negotiate something, have some phone calls scheduled, have some meetings scheduled, consultations. I may have to respond to a trademark, office action, some marketing stuff. So, come speak on the radio occasionally.
Right.
do things like that. So it's a full day. And sure. I'm based over at the Goat Farm Arts Center, which I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with. It's on the west side of town. It's a really kind of special place. It's kind of weird. It's kind of plopped down right in the center of Atlanta, but you feel like you're in old Europe or something like that.
Oh,
it's based
cool.
in an old warehouse that's that's like kind of falling apart, kind of quirky, but it's sort of become one of the epicenters of the arts community, which is why I chose it as my to have my office there.
That's nice. Yeah, so it's very artsy, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. So tell me, how do you find new clients? Do your clients refer people? Do other attorneys send people to you?
Yeah, so all the above. A lot of people find me online because I blog regularly at thecfirm.com. I am pretty active on social media, on Twitter. So a lot of random phone calls from people who find me online, good and bad.
That's good. Oh, well, yeah.
A lot of referrals from, you know, criminal defense attorneys, for example,
sure.
who I have a client.
I was getting to that.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, it's sort of been, you know, interesting crossovers for things like that. I also refer to some current clients. Because of my background in the industry, I already had some sort of contacts, you know, there. So some of those people became my clients and they've referred other people to me as well. So word of mouth, just referrals mostly.
Now, do you ever have to go to court for these clients?
I've done it just a few times.
Okay.
But
normally not the case.
No, I like to refer that out as often as I can. And in fact, I'm increasingly referring it out as my practice has grown. It's sort of, I consider it a luxury that I don't have to take those cases
sure.
unless I want to. However, one thing I do assist with is cease and desist letters, responding to them, drafting them. And then at a certain point, if we need to file something, I'll usually partner with someone like Ryan Locke, actually, who's here in studio. He's been great. He's been someone that I've sent a lot of cases to, and we'll either work on them together or I'll just say, this is all you, take it.
Right, right. Well, that's good. And, you know, a lot of attorneys, they're starting to really focus on what they're good at to be the best for their clients. And, you know, so they're people that go to trial all the time, they are trial attorneys.
Right.
Focus on that.
Absolutely.
It's you're doing right by your clients to refer them over to the people that focus on that.
Yeah,
and
you know, it's something that helps too. Like, I'll get referrals back from those attorneys that I send work to, so it ends up being a lot better for me. But, you know, what I prefer to do is sort of come in while things are still good, hopefully, kind of draft the prenup, so to speak, for the clients I'm working with. You know, sort of the idea with the contract is that if everything goes right, no one even looks at it once they sign it. It's just something that you have to kind of look at if things kind of go bad and see, you know, what the rules are.
Gotcha.
Ryan McPherson here, just going to jump in with a few questions. So you are a musician and you're helping musicians protect their rights. You know, what type of instrument do you play?
Guitar, bass.
Yeah, I was going to say, you look like a guitarist.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, you're a rock star. Yeah,
yeah.
That's cool. And,
well, thank you.
Yeah, and so what's your thoughts on these free streaming apps that are out there for music and artists? Someone who tries to protect those intellectual property, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's just another avenue to reach potential fans, and it's something that you can use or not use. I think it's pretty clear that payments are lower than they should be for artists per stream, but I have faith, or I hope anyway, that that's something that'll change. You know, it's, but the I guess the reality is that that stuff isn't really going anywhere. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people tend to forget that the reason why we went down that path in the first place is because of rampant piracy. So I'm at least glad there is another avenue for people who want to listen to music and who don't necessarily want to pay for it.
Yeah, no, you do. There is advertising on there. So
there's advertising. But I mean, I think really the key to it being successful is more paid subscribers. Because, you know, if you're someone who actually pays, then, you know, more money from your listens goes into the pockets of the artist versus the ad supported streams where, you know, they have all the overhead of handling all the ad support for the ads. So there's really, that's, you know, a much lower payment. So that's something I think we need to kind of work on. And it is kind of changing. You know, there's a lot more subscribers now than last year. So I'm hoping that continues to climb up. But yeah, I mean, I think it's something that artists can do or not do. if they want to, but I kind of see it as a way to reach more fans.
Yeah, it was just in the news last week with Taylor Swift and Apple making headlines about her refusal to go into their new streaming service, and they ultimately backed down to her. Apple said, we need to figure this out differently based on her, because she's the number one artist in the world.
Yeah, although, you know, it's interesting. There are some conspiracy theorists out there who are kind of thinking that, well, didn't she just sell her record label to Apple? And then, you know, here she is kind of coming out, and within 24 hours, they've changed their mind. I'm not saying that's what I believe, but I've seen a lot of articles on it. But at the very least, I'm very glad that it happened, because if, for those who don't know, what they were going to do is have a 3-month trial period during which no artist got paid for any streams, which, you know, was pretty clearly unfair to have them, you know, kind of use artists to, you know, in a way to help them kind of grow their own business.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they are paying, although it's a pretty low rate per stream during the trial period. But the thing that I'm most concerned about, as far as those services are concerned, is equitable payments for major label artists and independent artists. Unfortunately, particularly with Spotify, due to the larger payouts given to larger labels, independent streams from artists who aren't signed to major labels basically subsidize major label artist streams, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And and so what if you're an up-and-coming band here in the Atlanta area, you're just getting started, and you got big dreams of going to the big time one day? How do you know when is the right time to start protecting some of your songs and your copyright and that? When do, would you advise those people?
Well, you know, I'm a fan of pretty early on, if you want to schedule a consultation with someone, I can give you kind of an overview of the industry. You know, something that I do regularly tell some clients is, look, you know, go write good songs. You know, that's what you should be focusing on. You know, I think it is a good idea to be aware of the potential legal issues. And there are some things at the outset that you can go ahead and do to protect yourself. But, you know, you shouldn't really get bogged down in it, at least at the outset. You know, you should kind of focus on your craft. But definitely, you know, band agreements can be big for bands just getting started out. But, you know, but those can also be an issue, because you have a band that kind of, you know, sees themselves as, hey, we're sort of all equal here, when in reality you have one member who writes all the songs.
Right.
Potentially that member is also the one who's kind of funding everything. So if you're drafting a band agreement, it kind of makes sense for that member to have the rights to the band name, have the publishing. So so sometimes if you encourage a client to bring up the potential of a band agreement, it can lead to some issues with the band.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be creative. It's supposed to be an outlet.
You know, sort of the what I say about it is that, you know, everyone is on the same page, and we're all friends as long as we're all broke, you know. But as soon as money starts coming in, people start
fighting.
That's
a good point.
Yeah, so, I mean, being right in Atlanta, that's a great location for you, especially with all the entertainment. And now they're saying it's, you know, the music, it's one of the top music cities of the world.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm also very fortunate to do some work for Loeb & Loeb in Nashville. So I have the luxury of being able to drive up there and hang out in Nashville. It's one of my favorite cities. And they have real industry there.
Sure.
You know, there's actually record labels who have offices, you know, there. So, you know, so in Atlanta, it's not quite as robust as Nashville is, but it's still growing.
It's
absolutely
great that you were close.
Yeah.
Well, for the most part.
And film and TV work in the area has really blossomed. So that's an area of my practice that has really grown over the past 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. They're saying Hollywood South.
Yeah, that's right.
Is here. So. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. Mm-hmm. Will you let everybody know how they can reach you?
Yeah, so the website is thecfirm.com, spelled T-H-E, S as in Sam, E-A-Y, F as in Frank, I-R-M.com. On Twitter, at thecfirm.LLC.
Okay.
And then via phone, 404-913-4232.
Great. Thanks again for being here today.
You're welcome.
And just to remind our listeners of our sponsors, we have Peachtree Offices, 3A Law Practice Management, Atlanta's John Marshall Law School, Equitable Payments, Golden Pear Funding, and U.S. Legal Support. Again, go to AtlantaLegalExperts.com and you can find all the links and logos and links to their website. Excuse me. So we have also Stacey Erishman Mickle this morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here
today.
Thanks
for having me.
Stacey was born and raised in a farming community in Iowa. Stacey attended the University of Iowa, where she studied political science International Studies and Japanese.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Following graduation in December of 2005, she enrolled in the University of Iowa College of Law as a student on the Fast Track curriculum, enabling her to graduate in 2.5 years. Stacy was licensed in Georgia and practiced immigration law for Steffes & Associates, a boutique law firm, immigration law firm in Marietta. She was soon offered a job working in immigration law in Memphis, Tennessee, I'm familiar, at the Frager Law Correct. Firm, where she was later transferred to the Nashville, Tennessee office. And Stacy later found herself working for Yeoman, Madio, and Fasano.
Yeoman, Madio, and Fasano.
I did really bad there.
Yeah, it's okay.
In New York City. She was soon promoted to the managing to managing associate attorney of the largest firm office in Queens, where she supervised over 20 employees and managed hundreds of cases. In 2013, she decided to open her own office in the Atlanta metro area, where her practice is focused exclusively on immigration law. She specializes in waivers and deportation defense. You may have heard of her in October of 2014 when she filed a complaint against an immigration judge for denying her motion for a continuance while she was on maternity leave. Due to the fact she and her husband have no family in the area, she was forced to bring her baby to court, where the judge yelled at her and humiliated her. Wow. Can you tell me a little bit about that, since I've already started telling?
Yeah, sure. It was unbelievable. Even still talking about it, it's unbelievable. Basically, I was pregnant, and a family had come in and wanted to hire me, but I advised them, you know, hey, my maternity leave will be at the time of your next master calendar hearing, which is like a pretrial conference, a small 5-minute hearing. And I said, I'm going to have to file a motion to continue that master calendar hearing if you would like to hire me. And so they came in and they said, yes, we want to hire you. We don't care about the continuance. And so I said, okay.
Wow.
And I filed the continuance, and the judge sat on it for several weeks. I had my baby, and then he denied it like the hearing, I believe, was on a Tuesday, and he denied it on a Friday.
Oh my gosh.
And my husband is a truck driver and a Marine, and he was out of state. And I had this weeks-old baby with me, and I called around to the different daycare centers, and they said they just couldn't make an exception for me because she was less than 6 weeks old.
Sure.
And so I didn't know what to do. So I strapped her to my chest in a baby carrier, and I wore her into court. And he began screaming at me, saying I was unprofessional, and you know, it was ridiculous, and I agreed it was ridiculous, and that's why I requested maternity leave.
He left you no choice.
Yes, yeah. And and the rest is history. I left totally shaken, and I filed a complaint with EOIR, Department of Justice, and nothing happened.
Wow.
Yep.
See, and you hear the summary, lady brings baby to court. That's all you hear. Mm-hmm. So you don't hear the background, which we were explained, and that makes a lot more sense. It's not like you're just hanging around with babies all the time, like they wanted to make you feel.
So
and at that age, to be honest, and it's probably not professional, but you had no choice.
Yeah.
They're so quiet. Like, they just sleep.
Yeah, I mean, she did start to grumble a little bit, because here's what had happened was it was a little bit chilly outside, and so I had her in a lot of clothes, you know, and so when we got in, I took off her outer layer, but I think she got hot anyway, because it was a packed courtroom, which is also nasty for a baby, you know, being in that kind of environment, but... Mm-hmm. Again, what was I going to do? If I didn't show up, my clients could get an order of removal. Mm. And I'm not about to jeopardize their future either. And so, it was a crazy situation. But I called my pediatrician, and he said that it was the proper way to do it, because her face was protected against my chest.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you handled that very well, I think. And you're a mom.
Thank you.
And
yes.
You have your own business now. What's that like?
It's crazy. It's difficult, but I love it. I love what I do. I love my job. I love helping people. And I love my baby, too. She's pretty awesome. She comes to my office with me every Friday and hangs out. And, you know, she came to my office with me for the first several months of her life. And so it's good. It's hard to juggle everything, but
But at the same time, that's the freedom you have having your own firm.
Exactly. As a solo practitioner, I'm able to do that type of thing, and I know others wouldn't be so fortunate.
Right. Yes. So let's get into the immigration area. Your clients obviously really wanted you.
They did.
So obviously you're good. So tell me a little bit about immigration law and immigration, how you got into it.
Well, I actually got into it by default. It was kind of strange. I was working for the Democratic Party of Georgia, actually, and at part-time because I couldn't find full-time work. And I was calling registered Democrats, and one happened to be an immigration attorney. And I said, oh, I graduated from law school, but I can't find work, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I do immigration law. Do you speak any other languages? And I'm like, yeah, I speak Japanese. And I was okay at my Spanish at that point. And so she's like, why don't you come in and work part-time? So I started there, and I loved it, and then ended up getting full-time work at the Frager Law Firm in Memphis, and it was awesome.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So what's the best part about practicing immigration?
The best part is seeing the impact I have on people's lives directly, because the damage that is done when a deportation happens, whether rightfully or not, to the spouse and children and the family of these individuals, it's horrible and it's heartbreaking. And so when I can prevent that, it's so rewarding. It's exactly. It's the best job in the world.
Ryan McPherson here, just a couple of questions to jump in with. So the immigration, you know, can be an issue from multiple different countries from around the world. But I think in a lot of people's mind, they have thoughts of the Latin American countries.
Yes.
and impoverished people coming to our
Yes.
country to better themselves. So when they start getting deported, how can they afford your services, or how does that play into the service you provide?
Okay, well, that's a great question, actually, because that's a stereotype that's pretty profound. The community that I serve is Hispanic, but also from all different walks of life, all different parts of the world. And, you know, for certain individuals, I am a little more flexible in terms of payment because I do feel so passionate about their case. And so I do give them a little bit of flexibility. But in general, my clients are extremely hardworking individuals, and they do stop at nothing to make sure that they provide for their family and do what is right for their family. And so they make paying me mm-hmm. actually a priority, because they're seeing it as an investment in, you know, getting everything on track right, and mm-hmm. getting their work permit, for example, or getting their residency or other types of immigration benefits.
So it's good to know that you're flexible, that you're willing to listen to anyone in their case, and,
yes.
and perhaps, you know, vouch for them and their fight to stay here in this country.
Yes, absolutely.
And immigration law, in my mind, is something that's changing all the time, especially in this day and age.
It is.
And what are your thoughts on that and the future of it? And where do you go to find, you know, the resources to, mm-hmm. you know, keep up to date with everything?
Well, that's a great point as well. It's immigration law is federal law, and it's extremely complicated, and there are millions of little loopholes. And so I had originally intended on practicing immigration and criminal when I came down here, but, you know, immigration is hard enough by itself. So I've just decided I'm going to just focus on immigration. And every day I get updates from, it's called the American Immigration Lawyers Association, AILA. I get updates from them on law changes, on debates in Congress, on proposed bills, proposed mm-hmm. amendments, everything. So I stay up to date every day, basically. I have to check. Yeah. And in the future, I do believe that we have to have comprehensive immigration reform. I don't know when or how or what, but it's got to happen, because right now it's bad. It's really bad.
He keeps saying soon.
Yeah.
Soon.
It's like in my office, we are like, when are we going to do that? 3 weeks.
Yeah.
We always say 3 weeks. It just seems to fit.
Yeah, 3 weeks. Nice. Yeah, I wish it was 3 weeks in immigration, but I don't think that's.
But there's so many layers to it, and there's so many things to take into consideration that it can't just be a decision, I think, by one person overnight that you've really got to, you know, dive into this thing and stay into it for a long time before we can come out with a solution that, you know, really helps everyone benefit.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've got the employment issues on bringing qualified, skilled workers to the United States. We've got the security issues for apprehending criminals and deportation. And we have also the family issues where we need to bring family. Well, don't need to, where there's the option to bring family members here lawfully of U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Yeah. And so there are multiple complicated layers to immigration.
So I'm guessing you work with family lawyers and criminal defense lawyers.
Yes, a lot. Yes, exactly. It's immigration and criminal overlap quite a bit, and so I'm in constant need of good, truthful, honest, ethical criminal defense attorneys.
I think I have one.
I think so.
Somewhere. Coming up next.
We hope.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see how he sounds.
Yeah.
So you opened your firm in 2013. You've gotten to the 2-year mark.
Almost November, okay. December kind of. Yeah.
That's
almost.
Always good. There's that 2-year hump that you got to get over. So.
Yeah. Well, it's been a challenge, but thanks to my husband, I've been able to focus all my efforts into my business, and he's been supporting us financially. Thank you, baby, if you're listening. And because of that, you know, I was able to expand pretty quickly. And so I'm very pleased.
So how do you get new clients?
I do a lot of what I would consider grassroots marketing. I go to a lot of the local Hispanic festivals and Hispanic Christian festivals and food tastings and things like that. And I go to a lot of the locally owned restaurants and markets and schmooze, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And I also have a weekly radio show. I'm on the radio twice a week on 96.5 and 1010 a.m.
That's a Spanish-speaking station.
Yes,
though.
It
right.
is. Yes. Vita.
Okay.
Yes.
So now you're... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you speak Spanish and Japanese?
Yes. My Japanese has slipped some now that Spanish is my more dominant second language, but, you know, I can probably slip back into Japanese if I have to.
Is there a Japanese radio she should go on?
I don't think I could do that. Not anymore. Yeah. No.
And but there's a big Korean, you know, are you in that as well?
I would like to get into the Korean community, market, yeah. The Korean market, but it's a very isolated community. I shouldn't say isolated, a very exclusive community. Exclusive, and so it's kind of tough to break into that market, but I would love to get a Korean speaking employee and branch out into that market. Yes.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
If you'll let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. My office is located next to the Sugarloaf Mills Mall in Lawrenceville at 5415 Sugarloaf Parkway, Suite 1104. My phone number is 678-985-0313. My website is erishmanlaw.com. That's erishmanlaw.com. I am on Twitter at erishmanlaw and on Facebook at the Erishman Law Firm. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. And just to remind our listeners, you are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, helping attorneys get the word out about their cause.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Who's up next?
We have Ryan Locke here today, being so quiet and patient.
Not anymore.
And he is a trial lawyer. He went to law school and started his own firm because he loves thinking strategically about tough problems, writing elegantly and effectively, and standing up in front of people to argue his case. He spends hundreds of hours in the courtroom and thousands of hours outside representing his clients to the best outcomes possible. The results speak for themselves. He also represents immigrants. Right after law school, he lived in Mexico and represented refugees and asylum seekers with the South Texas Pro Bono Asylum Representation Project. Today, he mostly represents immigrants getting married to citizens or spouses seeking work authorization. He lives in East Atlanta with his wife, two small children, and one medium-sized dog. He cooks a lot, brews beer, and blasts Spotify at the office, and his official drink is Diet Dr. Pepper, and official brewery this summer is Creature Comforts from Athens, Georgia.
And you can send cases of those products to my office downtown. Any representatives are listening.
Yeah, that sounds like my kind of office and my kind of attorney.
But you know, when I opened my office, I wanted it to be different than, you know, the kind of stereotypical high pressure, you know, obnoxious criminal defense lawyer, right? Not that I know many, but but you know, I wanted to run my business my own way,
sure.
And so I've tried to do that both in how I, you know, interact with clients, how I kind of set up my office environment, how I use technology to work with my clients and opposing counsel. So yeah, that was my goal, and I hope I'm doing it.
And I love that you brew beer.
Yes.
My husband and you will be best friends very soon.
We can trade some bottles.
Yeah. He's a very local beer fan. I'll tell you that for sure. So you're going to talk a little bit about criminal defense today.
Yes.
Who looks for a criminal defense attorney?
You think that answer would be easy, but it's not. You know, you think, well, criminals hire criminal defense lawyers, right? That makes sense. But you know, let me tell you who else talks to me. So there are people who are accused of doing something and they did it, right?
All the time.
You know, they call me. There are people who are accused of doing something and they didn't do, they did something, but they didn't do that, right? Those people call me. You know, there are people who did something wrong and they deserve to be punished for it and they accept responsibility. But the state wants a disproportionate punishment, right? Perhaps they're overcharging or they're just asking for way too much time in jail or on probation or fines or whatever. Those people talk to me. And finally, people who are wrongfully accused, right? People who have, you know, somehow are mixed up in something, did not do what they're accused of, and can prove it, right? At the very least, the state can't prove that they did what they're accused of. And so those people talk to me. And I also, before going out on my own, I was a public defender in the Atlanta Judicial Circuit. And I spent about half my time in the juvenile court in Fulton County. And so I also talk to a lot of parents of particularly teenagers.
Sure.
Who, you know, kind of making them aware that, you know, today we live in a different world than when we went to high school. And that there are many more consequences to, you know, teenage shenanigans than when we were running around. And so advising, you know, parents of teenagers and sometimes unfortunately representing their children.
Can you give me one of those examples, the difference between when we were teenagers and the teenagers?
Well, yeah,
now?
You know, like, you know, when we were in school, you could just kind of do these like innocent child things that were fine. You know, you could go to a party, you get broken up by the police and, you know, they drive you home. You know, you could bring something to school that you shouldn't. And, you know, the principal would talk to your parents and, you know, you get punished at home and that kind of be that. You know, maybe you get into a schoolyard fight and, you know, that kind of thing. And obviously those are serious, but they were between the school and the family and the child and they would be handled. You know, now there's a police officer in every public school in Georgia. When something goes wrong at school, the first person you will interact with is that police officer, not school officials, right? You will get arrested out of school. And unfortunately, you know, now there are a lot of criminal rights issues that are occurring at school. For example, someone called me, said, you know, the school accused my daughter of posting things on social media that other children found threatening. And so they hauled her down to the office and the police officer said, give me your phone so I can look at your social media.
Mm.
Well, what do you do? You know, what do you do as a child? What do you do as a parent?
Just don't know.
Right. What are your rights in that situation? And so, you know, those types of things are moving away from being handled by local school administration and towards the juvenile court downtown.
Gotcha. So I was writing my next question down, actually. Do you spend time educating parents?
I do. You know, I speak to parents at you know, various events, things like that. I continue to be appointed cases in the juvenile court. which really is a great honor for me that the Public Defender Standards Council, you know, continues to choose me to represent parents. I mean, to represent juveniles. And you know what? I also produce a lot of stuff for parents. And I actually, there's a, if you go to my website, I've posted a Know Your Rights card that you can print out. There's one for adults and there's one especially for juveniles. And it's right at the top of my website. It's the Locke Firm, LOCKE.com. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that it's especially important for teenagers to be aware of the law, right? I mean, you know, you're a kid and you still got to have fun and you still got to do all the kind of stuff that teenagers do.
And you're invincible.
Yes, that's, yes. You will, teenagers who are listening, you will live forever. I want you to know that. But, you know, there are real consequences to what you can do, especially now when it's so easy to do them. You know,
sure.
when I was in high school, we didn't have social media.
Right.
So if I wanted to go and tell someone off, I had to make sure there was gas in my car, drive my Volvo station wagon that was my dad's over to the house, you know, make sure they were there. And, you know, now with I can touch my phone a couple times and the entire school can know that I want to fight.
Yeah,
someone.
That's the scary thing is right? That everybody knows everything. And I was just telling Ryan literally before the show, I would never have survived with social media ever in high school. Ever, because women, girls backstab like crazy. And for me to know it, like I already knew it was going on, but to see it, that would just been another story. So going back to the police officer that checked that student's phone.
Yes.
I've learned just from being on the show, like I could probably pass the bar at this point.
Yeah, I think you should.
The Fourth Amendment rights.
Yes.
And how they're just being squashed right now. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, the Fourth Amendment, I believe it is still alive, right? Perhaps it's on life support. The Fourth Amendment's kind of like a Swiss cheese amendment where there are perhaps more exceptions than there are, you know, applications. And we've certainly seen a discussion at the national level of the, you know, kind of the extent of our Fourth Amendment protections against national security interests, you know? And you know, that's a healthy debate that we should have. The stuff that I'm more concerned about on the local level is, you know, the stuff that I deal with every day. You know, when you get pulled over by a police officer and he says, hey, you know, you don't mind if I search your car, right? What do you have? What can you do? You know, if a police officer comes to your home, you know, and says, hey, you don't mind if I look through your home? You know, what can you do? These really fact-specific questions that, you know, really affect people's lives, you know?
Right.
And at school, it's an even, you know, I guess tougher balance because schools have a responsibility to protect students, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And when you send your child to a public school, right, you're trusting that public school is going to look out for the safety of your child and other students, right? And you have less privacy protections as a student at school, right? Now, where it gets iffy is when the police officers are running around searching things at school versus school officials, right? It gets into a very fact-specific analysis. But the long and short of it is, you know, we as citizens still have rights, you know? We, obviously, we're responsible to maintain a secure and lawful community, right? Mm-hmm. And we empower people to do that. But, you know, we also have a strong tradition in this country of privacy, of being let alone, of being able to do what we want to do and not having to be open to government intrusion. Right. And that's a fight we have you know, every day.
Every day. You're right about that. I mean, it's in the news almost constantly about how government is overstepping our bounds and perhaps steering us in ways we don't want to go. But, you know, we are all here, love our country either way. So. But you mentioned in the beginning of your segment there about technology and how one of your goals was to bring that into your practice. What are some technology that you utilize and then how has it helped you in growing your practice?
You know, it's really cool the stuff that I can do as a solo using technology that, you know, even a decade ago I wouldn't have been able to do, particularly with cloud computing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can sit down. I mean, you know, my practice essentially is in the cloud. And so it helps because I have an office downtown, but I'll represent people in counties all across Georgia. And so, you know, if I'm in Wayne County and, you know, I get out of my car after that drive and I realize, you know, I forgot a file at the office. Well, it's extremely easy for me to connect to the internet and get it, right? I've had cases where I pull it up on my phone if I'm in court and I realize, oh, shoot, I needed that document, you know, or where are my notes on this? I started going to court. It used to be where you would lug around, you know, these banker's boxes full of stuff. I carry around an iPad now. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to collect, organize, analyze, produce evidence electronically. One really cool thing that we did recently was the long story short about this case is someone stole one of my client's identities and ran around and was committing all these crimes. And so we needed to show that my client was not where this stuff was happening. And so we were able to get his cell phone tower location data. Whenever you make a call or a text, your cell phone connects to a cell phone tower that's somewhere near where you are. Mm-hmm. This is at a very high level. And luckily, we were dealing with locations that are pretty far apart. And so, you know, this production from this phone company was tens of thousands of pages. But, you know, being able to use the kind of the software programs that I use, we were able to really quickly kind of splice that apart, figure out where my client was at a certain time, get it to an expert so that the expert could look at it overnight, and the next morning have everything kind of set to go. You know, I mean, this truly, this is where it would have taken that same amount of time in the past just to mail it to me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, things like that are really quite remarkable in how we run our practice.
That's great. And you often hear cell phone technology getting someone in trouble because they're lying about where they were. But,
right.
You know, this in a case where it actually helped someone prove where they were. So that's great that technology can be used to your advantage there. And we talked a lot about you helping juveniles in their case. Is that primarily your entire practice, is helping the kids in trouble? Or,
you know, I'd say about maybe a third of my practice is juvenile work. And then most of the remainder is criminal defense. I've some trial work. I work with John, who was on the show earlier, with some cases. I work with people like Stacy, who was just on, particularly in appealing old convictions for their immigrant clients. So, you know, one of the nice things about what I do is that, you know, before this, I was a public defender. And, you know, you just kind of had a caseload, you know, a stack of cases a mile high, and you just kind of ran through them, you know. And I was always doing these criminal defense cases. The nice thing is that, you know, now that I'm my own boss, I can kind of pick cases that are interesting to me too. You know, so I still have my kind of bread and butter, you know, criminal defense core practice. But for other things where, you know, a case or client really speaks to me or seems really interesting, I have the flexibility to do those things too, which is nice.
Any advice you would give someone who is about to start their own practice? Now that you've been doing it for a while now, what are some of those transition kind of key points that you would give them advice on?
However much money you have in the bank now, you need more. That's the
more money.
More, okay. Just get it. You know, it's funny because now any lawyer can be a solo lawyer. Like any lawyer can have their own firm if they have a laptop, a printer, and a scanner. Pretty much, you know, and so the overhead is just so low, right? But the risk is also high because it's down to you. You know, there's a lot of reward, but there's also a lot of risk because no one's covering your back. It was nice for me because I really got a great training at the public defender's office, and so when I went out on my own, you know, obviously I was worried about, you know, being a small business owner. I'd never taken a business class before I went out on my own. That was a mistake. Mm-hmm. I would suggest, you know, you learn about business before owning one.
Yeah.
It was nice that I knew what to do on the law side, so I did not have to worry about that.
Right.
Right. I had to worry about what everyone else worries about, getting clients and getting paid.
Yeah.
And how
do
you get new clients?
Yeah. You know, a lot of my clients are referrals from other lawyers. Lawyers who kind of know know the kind of work that I do and trust me with people who come to them. A lot of my trial work is with other lawyers, people like John, who have, you know, matters in their core areas, that kind of bleed over into litigation. You know, like it comes time to, all right, well, now we got to sue them. And, you know, I come in and step in for that. You know, I do some very minimal advertising, but, you know, I've really found that I enjoy more getting to know other lawyers in the community. And
the number one answer every time I ask.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So you're located downtown. If you could tell our listeners how exactly they can reach you.
Yeah. My website is thelockfirm.com. It's LOCKE. And you can also call me. My phone number is 404-909-7795.
There's a phone? What's that?
Yeah. Technology?
Now it's more, you can text me at that.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. We have just a few minutes left. We'll remind our listeners of our sponsors today. It's Peachtree Offices, 3A Law Practice Management, Atlanta's John Marshall Law School, Equitable Payments, Golden Pear Funding, and U.S. Legal Support. And you can listen to this show again in a couple of days here at AtlantaLegalExperts.com. Does anybody have any questions for any of the guests here today, since we have a couple more minutes?
I'll jump in if no one else wants to. I always like to, you know, ask a little personal question, and we'll start back with John about, where do you go to get inspired? Besides the music, I would guess is something that inspires you, but a place you go or something you do to kind of regroup and refocus so you can go back and help your clients.
Well, luckily the goat farm is so dynamic, and it's kind of like walking around a small arts college, and there's just so much creativity there. It's astounding. And you know, there's constantly installations, films being shot there, photo shoots going on, dancing groups performing. So the other cool thing about it is that, you know, there's sort of a